what can you do this weekend that won't cost you anything? In fact, what can you do in London that don't cost nothing at all? Took the walk with John the Cabbie, BBC 94.9. We live in the most beautiful city on the planet Earth, and let's go around and have a look at the joys that are there to be seen. Took the walk with John the Cabbie, BBC 94.9. My name's Big George, and I talk to cab driver John Kennedy about the best walks in London. It's fascinating. Talk the walk with John the Cabbie, BBC 94.9. And here's a cast iron guarantee. It's walking through the streets of London, but without any sight of Ralph McTell.
Oi! Morning, John.
Morning.
How you doing, all right?
You're not bad, not bad.
What's it like out there?
What's it like? A bit like Blackpool.
Is it? All the illuminations, all those yellow lights on.
They're everywhere. I mean, the good news is at the moment that they're coming back into town, so that means they've actually been somewhere, you know, in the city.
Oh, that's good. No,
yeah, but you know, like I said last week, I mean, there's a definite feeling of, it's 50-50. You pick up some punters that are, well, that's what I found anyway, that are quite still sort of like, you know, I think we'll be okay, we'll get through it. Then you pick other people up who are, you know, holding a box. And and in the news today, you know, I mean, it looks like possibly Goldman Sachs, former merchant bank, a bank now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Could be cutting jobs in London. And that's a worry. But this is going to happen. We've got to get through it.
Oh, it is, so. No, that was the other thing. There's a company up north. A company up north that rather than have job cuts, they've all decided to take a cut in wages. Actually, JCB, that's it.
Yeah.
They decided that in order to save, they was up for 350 job cuts. They're cutting their wages by, reducing their output by 20%.
Hmm.
I think that's a fantastic thing.
Well, you've got to commend the workforce, haven't you, that are thinking about their fellow workers, aren't you? I mean, it's actually a unique company, one of a great British success story, JCB, because, I mean, we're in Britain, they export to Europe, and then they have a plant in the, I think it's Brazil, where they export to the Americas, then one out in Asia. And they do things in the correct manner. They haven't taken the jobs from here. What they've done is transfer the technology to other parts of the globe, and then employ people, and there's less moving JCBs from here about on ships, or doing what some manufacturers have done, you know, which is, just keep the research and development here, and then ship all the work out elsewhere, and then make a load of people unemployed. So, probably part of the ethos of the company, I'd say. Not knowing them that well, but what I do know of them, probably part of the ethos, they don't want to lose people, because these are skilled workers.
Yeah.
You lose them once, you don't get them back, maybe.
That's the thing, and what I like about it is it shows solidarity with a workforce.
Yes.
They're saying, look, rather than, you know, it be a lottery, we want to keep our jobs. See, quite often, I remember there was a big stink at Vauxhall once. They had this whole thing where they were going to lose 2,000 jobs.
Yeah.
They had like 4,500 people apply for early retirement. Yes. You know, so it actually wasn't that big a deal. But I like the fact that they're actually saying, look, we'd rather have less money, but a secure, you know, we'll ride, that's what they're saying, we'll ride this recession.
Yeah, they'll ride the recession, they'll ride the storm together. And they'll come out of it as better, stronger, and actually realising they've helped each other.
Yeah, good luck to them.
It's good, it works. I think that's the beginning of a success story. I mean, and that shows you what you can do if you're prepared to work, management and workers cooperate. I'd say in the banking world, it's completely individualistic, different, completely. Yeah. You know, you're worth what you believe you can get. It's a different ethos completely.
And do you know what always amazes me? And it amazes me in any business, even my one, when they start to say all job cuts, they'll cut 20 people rather than one middle management or one senior management, which would be the same cost. You know, 20 workers who graft, you know, 40 hours a week to one senior management who probably has a couple of big dinners, writes a couple of memos, and I think that's it. I've never understood that.
Tends to be more to do with, I'll tell you why, it's to do with pension costs, it's to do with taxation that you're levying on it. You've got to pay to, like, you know, as well as you paying tax, the employer has to pay tax. So there is a cost saving. It's horrible to say it, but there actually is. I used to fire people for a living in a former.
Did you?
Yeah, it's known as the Grim Reaper at one point. I mean, it wasn't nice, but, you know, my party trick was turn up with a blank envelope with a cheque inside, tear it in half if they didn't accept, and walk out the door. There's nothing in the envelope, though.
No, right.
It's bluff. No, but I mean, yeah, because I mean, the idea was my belief was to try and help people find out as individuals what they need. Right. Some people was 3 months notice in lieu. I pay them to go now. Other people was 6 month gardening leave. It's you got to speak to people as individuals. This is where unions play a brilliant role, actually. When it's horrible to say it, in bad times, mm-hmm. sometimes trade unions do, you know, you probably find there's unions involved the JCB story here, where they can cushion the blow and they can negotiate better exit packages for people. And, you know, we did. Well, certainly worked for British Gas. We had great relations with the union. Cause I was on the union side and jumped ship to the other side and it was a good company. Yeah, it really was. But like anything, it's hard when change is very difficult and we are going through change right this moment in time. I mean, I've done an article. My industry's going through change.
Yeah.
A massive change. We will not see the work levels from the square mile return for at least probably 2 to 3 years. So we're going to have to readjust. But we'll do it. That's the thing.
Because you have to.
No, but we will do it. I mean, because, you know, and guess what? By the end of next year, there'll be another 800 taxi cab drivers amongst us. And they'll get welcome with open arms.
Yeah.
Cursed behind closed doors. Open arms. No, they will be welcome because, you know, they've gone through, everyone else has gone through.
Yeah.
And it's about riding that roller coaster, riding that storm, and always believing there's a better day to come.
Right, John, talk.
I had a good night last night.
Did you?
I believe that, you see.
Oh, see, yeah, I'm pleased about that.
Seriously, I got a fantastic ride from Grosvenor Square to St Albans, you know, in the middle of the night. And it's just luck. It's luck, you know.
So when you get to St Albans, you have to keep your light off until you get into the...
Well, to get back in the Met. I mean, just don't get your light off. You can't pick up outside your licensing area. But, you know, it's about, you know, I was struggling like everyone else, and all of a sudden... You know, it's just, you might, this might sound funny now, and other cab drivers understand this, it's not that you're the first cab in front of four others. Sometimes it can be you're the last one doing 20 mile hours, someone walks out of a door, because you never know what's around the next corner.
All right, and when you went to St Albans, was it on the clock or did you do a price?
On the clock, but I sort of agreed a price as well, like a cap. I capped it so it wouldn't go as high. And then in the end, he gave me a good tip anyway as well. Really nice guy. And if you're out there tonight, I'll be...
Lovely. He's just waiting outside. So let's get this nonsense over. Yeah. Right, talk to what, where are we going from?
We're still in the city of London.
Yeah.
We're at the junction of Queen Victoria Street and Queen Street. So we're not right down by Southwark Bridge. Go up Queen Street, sort of like halfway, and you'll see Queen Street, Queen Victoria Street. So Queen Victoria Street's running that diagonal street that runs, remember last week, from sort of like Newbridge Street, Blackfriars area, right to Mansion House.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, just did what the Romans did, just built a straight line there.
Yeah.
Then we invented one ways. We're at the middle of Queen Street, north, just north of the junction with Queen Victoria Street. And odd street this, because you've got a funny looking building on the right hand side. We're looking north, by the way. Because we're heading to, see what we're heading to, the Guildhall.
Okay.
And you can see it in the distance.
So we're at the corner of Queen Victoria Street and Queen Street.
And Queen Street.
Right, okay, and we're going north.
And we're going north. But what you'll see on your immediately on your right-hand side is this, it's a modern building, a rather odd-looking building, HSBC Normal Bank at the bottom, just a bank, a normal bank at the bottom of this base, this building. But it looks like it's made out of iron, it does. It looks like, I'll tell you what, if the aliens were to land somewhere and wanted to just morph into a building, this is something out of, like, Transformers, this would be it. It just doesn't look right in the square mile. I mean, look, I love some of the glass buildings, I hate some of the glass buildings. This building is odd.
We've got enough glass buildings now, haven't we, I reckon?
Oh, have we?
Yeah.
Yes, we've got more than the fair share. But this building just looks odd, and it doesn't do anything for this part of London. And when you see it on Queen Victoria Street, it does nothing at all. And, and you're sort of like this bottom of the street, it's a bit nondescript, the area. You're wondering what's going on, but, so if we just carry on walking a little bit further north, you'll see on our left-hand side, little turning Well Court. On our right, it's Pancras, so I think it's Pancras Lane. What you will notice is there's been a bit of, they've gone a bit mad with the old street furniture down in the square mile. And what you will notice is Yorkstone, where they level the road up. Remember we talked about it before?
Yeah.
But this is Yorkstone, where they've leveled the pavement up. So you're level with the road. And what you do notice, and certainly I notice when I'm doing these walks myself, just going on this stroll, that you forget it's a road.
Mm-hmm.
So you just walk out into it. Now, this is a dead-end lane, so it doesn't matter. But it does put the onus back on the car driver, to the point where there isn't... You just forget. You forget. You're actually... You know, I was always brought up with a curb. A curb mattered. You know, curb was, you know, stop, look left and right, your green cross code, then cross the road, and it was safe. And I do think we got this wrong. You know, where we sort of like level the road up, and it doesn't work. It's an odd feeling, especially if people got iPods in.
You talk about street furniture. I just come back from New York.
Mm.
I noticed how little street furniture there was there. You know, even in the financial district, even where it wasn't just the big straight gridiron roads, hardly any street furniture, and everybody gets around fine.
Yeah, well, I know. I mean, it's, well, again, last night I was in top one, St Albans, it's none. And it's a pleasure, actually, to see a pavement and no lampposts, poles. I mean, the odd lampposts, but no poles stuck everywhere. It just looks normal. It look, you feel like you've travelled back in time 20 years, because that's how it used to be. So, you know, they've gone a bit over the top in the city in parts. I mean, they've done it because they want to make it more pedestrian-friendly. Mm-hmm. I understand that, but I prefer when you see the slope on the pavement, you know, where you slope down for people with buggies and wheelchairs. And I prefer that, I do, rather than just having... Especially if you're blind here, because there's no actual knobbly bits. A bit awkward, I feel, you know, if you're partially sighted blind. But anyway, we'll move on. On our left-hand side, we had a pub then, the Golden Fleece, public house, packed to the rafters tonight, actually. Really was. A few loud people outside, plenty of people smoking outside. Plenty of scaffolding on our left-hand side. So there's still building work and renovation of buildings going on within the square mile. I think some are beyond the point of you can't stop. You know, you've got the building up. There's no windows existing. You've got to fill them in, effectively. So, and then we get to a junction with Cheapside.
Right.
Okay. And what's interesting here is now, right bang in front of you, you can see the Guildhall.
Yeah.
But immediately in front of you, you'll notice at eye level, ground level, three arches to a beautiful building. Above it, on its first floor, you'll notice three windows, box sash.
Yeah.
And on the outsides of the windows, you'll actually notice that where the window frame is, you've got the columns either side, and then they're conjoined, they are, with a curve. But the one in the middle is pitched, and it repeats itself on the second level. And then on the top level, you've got a beautiful, typical sort of, it's that Victorian Georgian balustrade, you'll notice, yeah, a lot of our buildings. And then that bit of a French look to it now, where you've got a bit of a pitch roof, but it goes flat. But this building is stunning. But this is obviously not the front of the building. So we're going to cross over.
Yeah.
And we're into King Street now. Okay, and again, keeping in mind now, I can see the old Guildhall in the distance. And it is looking beautiful, yeah, the nearer you get to it. And then, as I'm walking down the side of this building here on King Street, you look to your right-hand side now, it's on.
Yeah.
And you'll notice these two beautiful big iron doors. And the door knockers, I mean, that alone's just worth looking at. These are ornate door knockers. I didn't knock on the door. There's a bell that'll ring, but it just says, try the other door anyway. I'm only going to annoy someone. So maybe Saturday you get away with it or something. But, you know, it ain't right and upsetting a security guard. But these are big iron doors with two, one, and they are tempting. I'm sorry, it's tempting to see them. You want to give it the old.
It is always tempting to grab hold of a couple of knockers, aren't they? I mean, I would say that, yeah. Bang, 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 yeah, go on.
Sorry. Boom, boom, that's all I was saying. Anyway, it's called Atlas House.
All right.
And above the doorway is himself. So, you know, a bit of Greek mythology here, as I understand it. I mean, I didn't study my classics, but he's there, and he's there kneeling. He is, and you know, it's that pose where he has a sphere. As I understand, it's meant to be a celestial sphere, but as time moves on, it's more like he's got the globe on his shoulders. And it's all to do with the war, wasn't it? The Olympians and the Titans, I think, isn't it? And, you know, to stop him from causing any more trouble, he was just sent to the edge of, was it Gaia, isn't it? I think, or Gia, isn't it, they called the Earth, wasn't it? And then he was made to hold up the sky on his shoulders, effectively, to stop him basically creating trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to put it bluntly in layman's terms. But he's there above this doorway, and it does, you know, got to say, impressive.
He's a strong bloke.
Very, must be, I mean, to lift this place up. Yeah. I'll say that now, I mean, well, me here as well, and a few others.
And you know what? If you buy a chest expander, no matter how weak you are, that chest expander in 3 weeks will turn you into an Atlas. And I've seen it in the magazines.
Sure. Yeah, and yeah, but when you think of it,
so what is Atlas House then? What does it do?
Well, I'm not, just as a business there. You've got a Barclays Bank at one end. You have. I mean, it's just a business. But what it is a beautiful looking building, a stunning looking building.
Yeah,
it's an absolute stunning looking building. Beautiful, greyish, white stone. It is effectively.
Yeah,
and what you'll notice is now the pattern that we noticed on the that end of the building, because it's a rectangular in shape, it would be, with the windows, when I said to you they're curved or they're pitched, that follows, it does. You'll actually notice it, but there's more windows, obviously, on the longer side of a rectangle, and you'll see four or five windows, and then the two at the either end with the curved above it. And you'll just notice some really stunning, beautiful stonework, which you expect in the City of London, which we're losing at an alarming rate. And in a weird way, the slowdown will stop this from happening. I do think we actually need to take stock of the buildings we got within the square mile.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, because history has shown, or recent history has shown, that we have lost some beautiful buildings.
Massively.
Yeah, just for, you know, to put other stuff up a lot quicker and cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know why, really, sometimes. I mean, it's like, I know people want nice, big, high ceilings. Mm-hmm. I think now they'd like a job. Yeah. Most people, no matter how
high the ceiling is. I always do these walks on a Sunday, John.
Yeah, the City of London, this is a brilliant time to go there. It's a Saturday or a Sunday. Mm-hmm. You'll find very little traffic. That doesn't mean you walk into the road. You've still got to, cross carefully, because what traffic is there is moving at 30 mile an hour, it tends to be. But Saturday, Sunday, it's an oasis. You know, it really is an oasis, this part of the world, because it's just, you haven't got the 300,000, 350,000 people wandering around, like, doing other things. So, walked up a little bit further, and what we noticed is, it's King's House. And we noticed, what it was nice about it was the crown, just above the door. Nothing really dandy or fantastic about this building, but just a nice curb bit jutting out, it was on the main door, and a beautiful crown it was, and just the way it said King's House. And it's quite colourful, because sometimes you can get caught amongst that greyness you can in parts of London, and it does become too grey. And you just think, hang on, what's going on here? Like, it just seemed a bit boring. But again, more scaffolding. And then what we also noticed then is, on our right-hand side, there's a little passageway, Prudent Passage, it's called. What was nice about it was, I walked through it, leads to Ironmonger Lane, runs parallel. But what's nice about it, didn't smell of anything nasty, and the tiles were all nice and clean. And then, you know, they didn't just put a sign on the wall. When you look down at your feet, there's a little sign in the floor saying Prudent Passage.
How lovely.
And it is lovely, you know. And then you can see some of the fire exits to both these buildings now. That we, you know, like Atlas House, we just talked about, some fire exits to the buildings there. So it's a little passageway, runs into Ironmonger Lane. Ironmonger Lane, just about fit a cab or a car down there. Very, very narrow road it is. One way, that is the opposite direction. But we go back into King Street. And what happens now, we walk up to the north end of King Street, and we come to a junction with Gresham Street. Now, Gresham Street, again, if you look to your left, you'll see a massive glass building, new development, Lloyds Bank, actually. And they look quite busy. I would have thought they are with their takeover deal right this moment in time, and probably counting the bailout as well. You know, I mean, you know, but there's things going on there. You can tell there's activity happening in the building. And then to the right on the corner, your more traditional, again, stone building, beautiful wooden door. But right in front of us, what spoilt it? Big bit of roadworks. I mean, but then again, we're in London. I mean, it looked like communication works. But the reason why it's taken up such a wide area, they've raised this whole road again.
Now, cost a fortune to raise a road as well.
Well, I mean, the corporation's different. We're going to talk about the corporation in a moment. They're different to any other council because, we'll talk about it quickly. They only got 9,000 residents, but they got 350,000 workers. So it's the workers decide who runs the city and not the residents.
Residents
have a say. There's four wards where they're sort of packaged into. But the majority of residents tend to live on the Barbican, so they're not going to be like social housing. I mean, but there is some in the city.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, very different to everywhere else. And it's history, which we'll talk about shortly. But it's because this is normally a beautiful junction. Because you're right in front of us, again, we have the Guildhall.
Mm-hmm.
You can see, and it's called Guildhall Yard, dead in front of us. So now, because of the roadworks, it looks like they're going to be there for a couple of weeks. So if you are going to walk, either go left or right. I reckon you should go left. And what you'll find then is we're going to come to a church called St. Lawrence Jewry.
Right.
Now, this is the Corporation's Church.
It's a big old church, this one, isn't
this
it?
This is church. We're talking here, they're saying John Betjeman thinks it's very municipal, but very splendid. This church dates back to the 12th century, dedicated to St. Lawrence, and he was the instrument of whose martyrdom and the gridiron can be seen in the present church's weather vane. So there's a bit up there about him. It was a Jewish part of the city, was burnt down in the Great Fire of London, and rebuilt around 1670 to 1687. It's a Wren church, as most of them are in the City of London. But here's the thing again, what happened to it? On the 29th of December 1940, it got done in the Blitz. Absolutely.
All right, so it got bombed out in the Blitz.
It got bombed out in the Blitz, but so did all the buildings.
Don't look like it, though.
No, it's been rebuilt.
All right.
It's been rebuilt in 1957. Now, when you get to Guildhall Yard, okay, so you've gone round at the roadworks, and where we'd normally just walk straight across from King Street, get to Guildhall Yard, now get yourself to the right-hand side and look at the end of the church.
Right.
And what you will notice is this building is very dirty grey. Now, initially, my thoughts were that this needed a good clean. Until I got to Guildhall Yard and looked at the end of the building. Do you know what? Sometimes, like a fine bottle of wine, you've just got to leave it as it is. Because it looks like it's aged. If you think it's only been built, rebuilt in 1957. But there's these beautiful, like, normal, you know, cylindrical columns, four of them. There's two fantastic stained glass windows. There's three small curved areas that are set back that you could put statues or monuments in at some point in the future. Two beautiful, they're the rectangular style columns, square columns, they are on either end. And it's absolutely stunning, just standing there with your back looking at the end of this church. It really is, with its pitch roof and then the ornate leaves upon it. It really is wonderful. And all you're hoping for is a glimmer of light to shine back through so you can see what those stained glass windows are actually saying. It's quite dark, I mean, when I went a couple of weeks ago, I've done it in the evening, but again tonight, the light weren't there, it just wasn't a great day. And again, on our right-hand side, what we're seeing is this beautiful building, the Guildhall. I mean, it just, there's a phenomenal building on the right.
Yeah.
But for a moment, you're captured. In front of you, you're just there. And we're in the Ward of Cheap. You know,
that's probably the most misappropriated name. Yeah. Cheap.
Yeah, but this church, though, has a special standing within the City of London. It is the Corporation's Church. It's the one that they use. And it's meant to be unbelievable inside. They have, you know, piano, organ, recitals there. There's boards outside. Little board telling you also of the ward and who's the alderman and then who's the common councillors. And then there's a little board telling you when things are actually going on, when services are on. And
so the name of the church again is?
Is St. Lawrence Jewry.
Right.
Wonderful, wonderful, beautiful building. And I've only really looked at the end of it. But it just looks fantastic. But beautiful bit about this, on the right-hand side was an old police box. The one, not that they go in like a TARDIS, the one where they just go up and open the little door and there's a phone there. That's there. And then my favourite subject, what we just walked past on my left-hand side now, where that would be King Street on my left, yeah?
Yeah.
The Guildhall on my right.
Yeah.
We got wooden bollards, yeah?
And then wooden bollards?
Wooden bollards, and they're all padlocked into the ground. So you take them up and put the little trap back down. Then on our right-hand side, what we've got is rising bollards. We've got the anti-ram bollards.
Right.
There. I mean, that rise up out of the ground, black with the old Corporation red stripe. Then we've got the usual Corporation of London looking like a cannon bollard. And then we've got a real old one. Someone's nicked something off the top or broke something.
So you're saying there's a load of old bollards around here?
There are loads of old bollards around here.
Fair enough.
I mean, he said, no, but, and then, now just turn yourself and then look at the Guildhall.
Right.
This
unbelievable
is,
building.
This is, you know, again, moments like this are special. You go past it, most of my colleagues do every day. You can walk past it, but you don't actually, you know, notice it enough to take a look at it. And one thing I should say from the Guildhall Yard, you'll notice the wires, you will, up high between the church and the building to your right. And what it is, that's where they hang their banners out, their flags out, when there's a bit of pageantry, when there's a moment, you know, like in a few weekends' time, we got the Lord Mayor's show at the City of London, the new Lord Mayor will be inaugurated. And, you know, they put the banners out. So when it's a big occasion, the flags go out. The St. George crosses they do with the small sword in one corner. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the jacks go out. So it's wonderful to see. But this courtyard it's massive. It really is. And as I was there, cars were dropping off. There's obviously a do on there. There was this evening as well. So, but then you look to the right and you'll see an art gallery. Quite a modern building, this. Now, I'm going to talk about the art gallery because I'm going to do what the Chancellor Exchequer done this week. Break a golden rule.
Go on, then. Are we going to pay money?
For £2.50.
Hang about.
Listen.
All right.
Well, if the Chancellor can do it,
yeah.
Maybe, you know, now and again,
all right.
Try to break a golden rule.
All right.
And plenty have been broken.
Let me just check BBC Guidelines. Yeah, all right. We'll go for it.
It's £2.50 to get into the art gallery.
Mm-hmm.
But what it turns out, with that entrance fee, and there are concessions, by the way, I will come to them if I can actually find me a bit of paper. They found a Roman amphitheatre was found in 1988. Museum of London archaeologists made a discovery underneath this building.
All right.
I mean, when they were building this thing, they actually found a Roman amphitheatre. I mean, this is, do you know what? I didn't know this existed. I mean, I've been to the Roman Wall,
yeah.
So we all know the history of London, Londinium. But the idea that an amphitheatre sits there in the Guildhall Yard, And the doors have opened, I mean, what was it, 15 years later? So the doors opened about 10, 12 years ago, they did, to the public. And for admission to the gallery, that will include a tour around this amphitheatre. I think that's worth visiting.
For £2.50. That is amazing.
You know, and you'll see. But what you'll notice is the building on the right, obviously this would be underneath it, I think. The building on the right, it's quite modern. It's quite modern in its look. But you see how they've tried to encompass some of the old building, the old guild. You know, it's a bit like the National Gallery bit, you know, like where they try to make it look modern, but have a bit of the style of what was already there. A bit like Paternoster Square as well, the way they've thrown in a bit of the old with the modern architecture. Yeah. And they've done exactly the same here. Because when you're in Guildhall Yard, courtyard, and you look to the left, you think, God, who designed that? Because this is a right old 1960s, 70s bit. Very clean, obviously, because it's the corporation, but it does look a bit odd. So you get a real cliche. We've got an old church dating back to Wren, but it was rebuilt in 1957.
Yeah.
We've got a Roman amphitheatre, dates back to whenever, like, I mean, literally probably BC, isn't it, or AD. I mean, it was, you know, hundreds of years ago, thousands of years odd ago.
Well, a couple of thousand years ago, yeah.
Underneath a building. We've got a 1990, sort of like, whatever, rebuilt above it. Then we've got a 1414 sitting staring us right in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't really get much more of a cliche in one spot. And that's why it's so important this walk was short today. There's so much here in front of you.
Yeah.
Within the confines here, there's a clock museum.
Is there?
So who said nobody gave you the time in the city? Sorry about that. But it's true, there's a clock museum here. You know, and there's also a library. And it's free. I mean, it's like...
So I can walk into the Guildhall and look in
Monday,
the library.
Monday, Friday, Saturdays you've got to be careful of.
Yeah.
You've got to be careful on Saturday because if there's a, like, either Lord Mayor show going on, no. You wouldn't, that it'll be shut, it would be for the day, or if there's a function going
right.
on. But Monday to Friday, it's literally from like, I think it was 8:30 or 9 o'clock, just say 9 to be safe, till about 4:30. As a library there, because they're not just about themselves. Mm. They are there to promote Britain, and we'll talk about the role of the mayor of the City of London, how that come about shortly. But this is, it's a real, it's just, do you know what? I get into the middle here, and then just stand in the middle of the courtyard and look around. It is odd. You are time travelling.
I can imagine that.
You really are. And it's just the fact that, you know, and if you shut your eyes and you think, hang on, what is going on? I'm seeing 60s, 70s, 80s, something else like I said, a couple thousand years, 1414, 15th century. You've got then like back to the 17th century, then a rebuild in the 20th century. I mean, it's phenomenal what exists in this city. And it shows the history it's built upon. Because this is one hell of an amazing place. It really is. But we were talking, I need to mention, what was it? I've lost me a bit of paper there, I was. Sorry about that. The Mayor of the City of London. The Lord Mayor of the City of London. What's interesting about his role is, what is the job? Well, they're the head man of the corporation.
Because this is the weird thing. We've got Boris.
Yes.
Who's the Mayor. And we've got the Lord Mayor, haven't we?
Yeah. Completely two different jobs. One, I mean, the City of London, under a royal charter, effectively, it's where commerce, business takes place. And, and where money was raised for kings in the past, you know, for wars. And you know, and what we'll notice on the Lord Mayor's show, the reason why the Lord Mayor goes and pledges allegiance to the Crown, because they weren't trusted in the past, you know, a long time ago. They weren't, you know. People were going, hang on, what are this lot up to? Trying to make money, you know. And people were concerned, kings were, so they forced them to take an oath of allegiance to the Crown. Now it's, you know, rock solid, basically. We're talking, as we're hearing in the news, what, 20-odd percent GDP of our gross domestic product. This place matters. And it's not just about banking. It's about insurance. It's about reinsurance. It's about accountancy. It's about all the old trades and the guilds. It's history. It's liverymen. It's different companies. Like my own industry has one, Hackney Carriage Drivers, a reasonably new company. Like, you know, so its history is immense. Its history is amazing. And we're talking, what, 1212, aren't we? I mean, we're talking 13th century.
Yeah.
When it started. Dick Whittington, one of the famous Lord Mayors, three times. But let me just mention a bit about the building. Built between 1411 and 1440, designed to reflect the importance of London's ruling elite. In the 21st century, its splendour is still awe-inspiring, and they are right. The walls of this national treasure lie six spectacular rooms, providing unique surroundings for corporate and private hospitality. And you often see it, don't you, when people are dining there. And it's his splendour you're going to dine in. I mean, I actually think...
Yeah.
I remember taking a chat from a Chinese trade delegation there and then picked him up a couple of years ago afterwards. And he was...
He'd been in there for a couple of years?
No.
All right, no, just the same bloke, yeah.
Fair meter still running. I mean, if you could do it now. No, but, you know, but he was dumbstruck when he come out. And that's what it does. I think it does set people back. They suddenly realise, whoa, these people haven't just turned up. The individuals might, but what it stands for, been here for many, many centuries.
Yeah.
You know, and it's lots of tradition here. So, you know, there's something magical about this place. So, if you go onto their website, absolutely fantastic. Worth a butcher's, worth a look. And get down there, you know. And you know, like I said, it's got a library, got a clock museum. You know, we've got the other museum. If you really, you know, if you can, £2.50, there are concessions as well. I think it's worth a try, worth a go to see. Imagine that, a piece of rhyme you're seeing. You know, I think this is amazing. But back to the mayor of the City of London.
All right.
Who is he? What is he? Well, he's head of the City of London. Lord Mayor presides over governing bodies, the Court of the Aldermen.
Mm-hmm.
Every ward has an alderman. Elderman. That's where I reckon the word comes from. Alderman, elderman.
Mm-hmm.
And then amongst that ward, they'll have common councillors. So they're normal councillors. And so the mayor heads the alderman, the Court of Common Council. He's the chief magistrate of the City of London, admiral of the Port of London, chancellor of City University, president or patron of many other civic and charitable organisations. And his or her job, because there has been one female Lord Mayor, I don't know her name, there has been one,
right.
But they represent the business interests of this nation. And that's their job, to promote London overseas. Not just here, but to travel extensively overseas, and to say this is a great place to come and raise capital and money when, obviously, the banks are loaning to each
other. So this isn't just a ceremonial position.
No, not at all. Actually, this is a very powerful position. I'm still of the belief. I mean, what you need, if with the Mayor of London, it's important to have. Now, I'm talking about the Boris Johnson position. I always thought it was odd that Ken never built up a better relationship with the Mayor of the City of London,
mm-hmm.
because with their knowledge. And their access, even in these harder times, to finance and expertise, these people can probably solve most of the problems that you've got in this city.
Right.
Even now, because if we're really honest, most of the problems that we've got in the city are from other banks, i.e. from majority American banks.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where the real problem lies. We've just caught the cold, or the flu, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, so
the raging man flu, yeah.
Yeah, well, that was always going to happen, though, I think. So it's an important job. And it's something that this tradition will go on. No doubt about it.
Yeah, I'd never want to be a mayor, a Lord Mayor like that. I've seen in my time, John, I've had to meet up with loads of mayors. And the amount of times that mayors go to functions and then they have a couple of glasses of wine, then another couple. I've seen some right old dipso mayors in my time.
Hmm.
I've seen them falling over, you know, because they turn up and someone gives them a glass of wine.
Well, I think this is the tent to be the job where, you know, it more likely be one glass and you're on water.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and the other thing, maybe if you go to enough of those dudes with the port and the wine, you get used to it.
Yeah.
But that's not a healthy way to live, though.
No, it's not.
Because, I mean,
I saw this one mayor, and he was up, he had to give a speech, and it was like the fourth or fifth thing he'd done that day. And he was just stumbling all over the place. He's a builder. Yeah, I can't name him or where he was, but he was a builder, John, and he stands up, and, like, he was completely gone, and he started talking, he was slurring, and someone started to laugh, and he thought he'd become a comedian. So then the vile filth that came out of his mouth, he wasn't funny, he just suddenly became a builder, you know, like, at the end of the week, and he's talking away, and then he falls over, and then his missus comes up, and she starts cursing him out, and they're having a row on stage, and well, that's about it. But it's like to my amusement. Anyway, John, I've ruined it.
No, you haven't. No, not at all. No, now what's interesting now? We have sheriffs. I'll talk about. We have two sheriffs also. These are important jobs. Two sheriffs in the city.
Why have we got bad guys out there for them to catch?
Well, oddly enough, I mean, the two sheriffs are elected on Midsummer's Day every year in a guild hall by the city livery companies. Their duties include attending the Lord Mayor in carrying out his official duties. So they're there to assist the Lord Mayor. And I think, as I understand protocol, you need to be a sheriff before you can become the Lord Mayor.
Right.
So you get to learn the ropes the previous year. Or the one before it, before you actually become the mayor. Now, that's quite a sensible way to hand things over, isn't it? So you're assisting, helping somebody, and then you take over the job you would. But you also have other duties, to attend sessions at the Central Criminal Court in the Old Bailey and presenting petitions from the city to Parliament at the bar in the House of Commons. We're talking here, the Common Council, look, since 1385 when the Common Council stipulated that every future Lord Mayor should have previously been sheriff so that he may have tried at his governance and bounty before he attains to the estate of Mayor. So there we have it. Dates back to 1385, 14th century there. I mean, and that's, you know, again, it shows you these people haven't turned up overnight. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
We're going to get out of the problems we're in.
you see. I do believe it. Because
we always will. That's the thing.
In grey suits they do. Yeah. And they are in grey suits. Mm. And they are very understated. And they're very, very... And they don't overstate anything. And, you know, I actually find them... The majority of them I've ever met, even when they've had a couple of glasses of port, you know, decent people who do the right thing by most people.
Yeah,
I think,
good.
In all their time. And but the Office of Lord Mayor now... Going to finish on this little bit. We're talking goes back to 1189. Since then, 700 men and one woman. So we could say we got equality, but of an odd kind.
700 men and one woman.
Yeah. Most famous is Dick Whitten. Most of what we knew about
him. That's the ratio in some Australian mining towns.
I could well believe
that. Anyway, sorry, John Carroll.
In bars, anyway.
Yeah.
Dick Whittington, a lot of what was said about him and the cat is a fable. I mean, we're talking he was mayor for 1397, 1406 and 1419. In fact, this man was a mercer. He was a dealer in costly fabrics such as silk, wool merchant and a financier of the royals. So he wasn't a nobody. But like anything, stories and people adding bits on can get told over time. So, you know, it's an important role, it's an important job. And this year, on the 8th of November... We've got the Lord Mayor's show. And my God, are we in for one. It's going to be live on BBC television. And this starts at 11 a.m. The procession is 3 miles long. I actually think it's even longer.
Hang on, 3 miles long?
The So the modern procession is over 3 miles long. Essentially 1.3 miles longer than the route it follows. And well, remember what we said about they're going to be going from the city... to the Royal Courts of Justice, and we'll see him in that wonderful golden coach. I mean, I actually think this coach does upstage Her Majesty's, and you'll see the pikemen, you will as well, walk alongside the coach, and all the livery companies then in the procession. So I think we've got a Batmobile this year from the London cab trade,
right?
And we've got a rabbit looking cab, as I understand, and we'll have all the other different companies, from chemists to accountants, you know, to we'll have some some soldiers, it will be from the London Regiment also. I mean, it's a big day out, it's free, this costs you absolutely nothing.
I remember as a kid going to see this.
And then fireworks later on as well.
Yeah.
Between Blackfriars and...
I used to love it. The pomp and... there's not a single country in the world that has pomps and circumstances better than we do, is there?
No, well, this is an amazing weekend, because we're going to talk about it in a few weeks' time. On the 9th of November, the nearest Sunday to the 11th is Armistice Day.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got two amazing days in one weekend that will cost you absolutely nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
One to watch the pageantry,
yeah.
And then one to pay respects the following day.
Although the one to pay respects is still a wonderful sight.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's
chilling as well. I mean, it's always, I always think to myself, those moments where you get that many people in one space and you can hear a pin drop. I love the sound. It sounds crazy, but I love the sound of silent humanity.
Hmm.
You know, that moment where you can just hear everybody being respectful. There's something amazing about that.
Yeah, I mean, when you meet these guys, you know, and you do meet them.
You know, the only thing that ruins it? Is the aeroplanes flying over the top. You suddenly think to yourself, why can't on that one, you know, for that couple of hour, divert away? Because there's loads of ways into Heathrow, and it just depends how they do it. But divert away, because I've only ever done it once, been in the crowd, and as we were standing there, and I thought, it just ruined a moment.
But also, the other thing I like about that day is not just the respects of those that have fallen and those that are remembering their comrades, is you'll hear concert band music like no other. Mm-hmm. When you hear that Elgar Nimrod, that's the one that gets you. It's that real slow, and it gets the back of your throat. Even if you're watching it on TV, it's a killer, that is, I find. And it's a sad moment. So we'll be talking about that in a week or two's time. About the cenotaph in that part of London. But what you got on 2008, obviously on the 8th of November, 11 a.m. So if you want to get a good pitch,
I mean, queue up now. I would do.
Well, I actually reckon, I mean, where's a good pitch, people say, you see, because you're coming from, if you think the Mansion House, you are, I mean, so I mean, the beginning, actually, I think the better bit is the other end, down by the Royal Courts of Justice, Fleet Street. Get along there, and you see them as they go up the Royal Courts of Justice of the Strand. I mean, because, you know, that's where you'll see them get out of the coach. And it's like, you know, and then it's just like one big conga, isn't it? It really is. You know, it's an amazing thing to watch. And it's a great thing to disrupt London with as well.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. It's good to shut roads for things like these and divert traffic and let people enjoy, you know, pageantry like no other country in the world, and realise that no matter, like I said last week, no matter how bad things get, do you know what? There's always going to be another mayor next year, Lord Mayor, and I'm sure in 2 or 3 years' time we'll have another election for our own mayor of London. And life goes on.
It certainly does.
And we're, you know, we're going
to
get there.
Now, if anybody wants to revisit this or find out more information, where do they go?
We can go to freelondonevents.co.uk. Both last week's walk and this week's walk will be going up tomorrow and Saturday with pictures also. And then you can also have a look on, it's londonnews.co.uk.
Where I'm londonnews.com.
.com. Well, I'm a columnist, and also where we put Talk the Walk up on there as well, and I'll have a script up there. So, a bit late this week, I'm with my script from last week, but that's down to me.
This will be up by Monday, then, will it?
Both of them will be, yeah. Last week's and this week's, and then on Free London Events, it's got the pictures and everything, and still, has Omar texted in?
No. Has Omar texted in for John yet? Fair enough.
I'm definitely not singing now.
Omar. All right. Well, although Omar, maybe he will, because John, thank you very much indeed. Yes. It's always a pleasure, mate. Because we have John Kennedy in to Talk the Walk with John the Cabbie, BBC 94.9. So that's freelondonevents.co.uk.
Yep.
Or londondailynews.com, where you can find out more about Talk the Walk with John the Cabbie, BBC 94.9. So John Kennedy, John the Cabbie, going out now to be a part of the Blackpool Illuminations on the streets of London. But Talk the Walk with John the Cabbie, BBC 94.9. All right, and I want to hear from you right now, 020 722 42000. You are tuned to BBC London 94.9.